Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, June 23rd. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as third baseman Mikel Garcia was placed on the 10-day IL with a strained hand muscle. The timeline for Garcia's return is unclear, though. This seems like more of a minor issue, so hopefully Garcia just misses the minimum time. But with Garcia headed to the IL, third baseman Josh Rojas was recalled from the minors, and it looks like Nick Lofton will continue to handle third base duties for the Royals. Next, starting pitcher Lucas Giolito was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. Giolito may be out for more than the minimum time. It's always pretty scary when pitchers deal with elbow injuries. Giolito has not looked great during his first few starts with the Padres. With Giolito out, starting pitcher J.P. Sears was recalled from the minors, and he will start today versus the Braves. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Shane Bieber was activated from the 60-day IL to make his season debut versus the Astros, and it did not go well. I had been pumping him up the past couple of days because it looked like he might make his debut prior to Tuesday. It looked like he might start on Monday, but he didn't. And in his return, Bieber was not great. 3 2/3 innings, 9 hits, 4 earned, no walks, 2 Ks for the former Cy Young Award winner. Hopefully he gets back on track. I think he's somebody that should be rostered everywhere. Really tough to see him struggle so much, especially after I said, oh, this is a guy you got to start, this is a guy you got to stream, and he struggles right away. Though we can blame this on a still ill and say that Bieber is going to be much better in his next start. Reliever Lázaro Estrada was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, outfielder Randy Arozarena was activated from the 10-day IL after missing just a week with a hamstring strain. Arozarena will return to being the Mariners' everyday left fielder, as outfielder Connor Joe was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, catcher Freddie Fermin was activated from the 7-day IL after missing 7 days with a concussion. He should be the everyday catcher moving forward, sending Rodolfo Duran to the bench. However, Fermin did not start in his return. Maybe the Padres are taking it easy on him, or maybe Duran is going to have a more significant role than we expect. Catcher Blake Hunt was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, shortstop Ellie De La Cruz was activated from the 10-day IL after missing 3 weeks with a hamstring strain. De La Cruz will return to being the Reds' everyday shortstop, and outfielder Will Benson was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. In terms of news, we've got a lot. Starting pitcher Edward Cabrera is expected to be placed on the 15-day IL after he suffered a strained hamstring while fielding a tough play at first on Tuesday. Hopefully Cabrera doesn't have to miss more than the minimum time. His former teammate, starting pitcher Eury Pérez, is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today to start versus the Rangers. Pérez has missed about a month with a strained gracilis, so Pérez returning for the Marlins versus the Rangers today. The Giants are getting back starter Tyler Molly, who's expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today to start versus the A's. He's missed a month with a strained hamstring, and he's not somebody that needs to be rostered in fantasy at the moment. Next, shortstop Francisco Lindor is expected to make his long-awaited return from the 10-day IL today. He'll return to being the Mets' everyday shortstop after missing 2 months with a strained calf. So Francisco Lindor back for the Mets. Next, starting pitcher Mitch Bratt is expected to be recalled from the minors to make his MLB debut in St. Louis. He's the Diamondbacks' number 14 prospect, and the 22-year-old left-handed pitching Bratt had a 2.84 ERA and a 25% strikeout rate in 11 starts at AAA this year. Next, starting pitcher Christian Scott is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL on Saturday to start versus the Phillies. Scott is expected to miss the minimum time with a hip impingement. Joining him in returning to the majors this weekend, Romy Gonzalez is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL on Saturday after missing all season after undergoing arthroscopic shoulder debridement. The lefty killing Gonzalez has the ability to play 3 infield positions and will likely be on the short side of a DH platoon for the Red Sox. Next shortstop, Connor Griffin, will start a rehab assignment today as he's recovering from a forearm strain, so hopefully he can return within the next week or so. Starting pitcher Jack Leiter underwent arthroscopic surgery to remove loose bodies from his ankle, which not as bad as his elbow, but he is expected to return before the end of the season. However, Leiter's timeline is fluid, so not sure if that means he's going to return in a month or two or if this is going to be a September return for Leiter. Either way, he's not somebody you need to run to the wire for in standard leagues regardless. And lastly, Cole Reagans is expected to undergo a surgical procedure on his elbow. It's not like yet clear what that procedure will be, but it's terrible news for Reagans. He's likely out for at least 2 more months, so you can probably drop him in fantasy circles, but maybe if he's already on your IL and that's fine with you, then you can wait a couple days or a week until we find out what this procedure is going to be for Cole Reagans. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with outfielder Jack Caglione, who helped the Royals to win in Tampa, going 3-for-5 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 14 homers on the year now. First one went 443 feet at 109 miles per hour. Second one, 416 feet at 110 miles per hour. And Caglione just continues to rake the ball in June. That's now 9 homers this month, tied with Nick Kurtz for the second most in baseball, trailing only Pete Crow Armstrong. Caglione is breaking out in the month of June. His teammate, third baseman Nick Lofton, helped the Royals to win in Tampa Bay, going 4-for-5 with 4 runs, a home run, and 2 runs batted in. It was his third homer, and it traveled 403 feet at 104 miles per hour. Lofton has been filling in at third base with Michael Garcia covering for Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop, but with Garcia hitting the IL, Lofton will continue to hold on to the hot corner role for the Royals. He's making the most of it, exhibiting his usually excellent plate discipline and contact metrics with a 12% walk rate and 14% strikeout rate, but Lofton showing off a higher power ceiling than we've come to expect from him as he set a new max exit velocity this year at 111 miles per hour. It may just be raw power for Lofton, but it's manifested in the form of his best ISO power mark of his career, and he's now just one homer shy of his career high in home runs. He's likely worth trusting in 15-team roto leagues while he has playing time, and Lofton could be a nice bat to ride in points leagues that value his plate discipline, but he doesn't appear to be a player that's on the verge of breaking out. Lastly, we have second baseman Bryson Stott, who helped the Phillies to win in our nation's capital, going 3-for-4 with 4 runs, a home run, 3 runs batted in, and a stolen base to complete the combo meal. It was his 7th homer and 15th steal, and the homer went 403 feet at 104 miles per hour. Stott is doing typical Stott things, a decent amount of homers, plenty of steals, and a batting average that sort of leaves you wanting more, while being durable and available, allowing him to rack up runs and RBI in the middle of the Phillies lineup. Stott's suggesting there's potential for more, though, with a new career high max exit velocity at 112 miles per hour, a career high barrel rate north of 7%, a career high hard hit rate, and a career best average bat speed. Stott's hitting the ball harder and more consistently. He's lifting the ball more than ever, and he's pulling the ball more than ever without a reduction in his contact ability, which suggests that Stott has the potential for a 20 homer campaign if he keeps up this approach. And I think the homers will start flowing in July and August for Bryson Stott. But if you'd like more information or a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances. And after a great day of pitching on Monday, we had another great day of pitching on Tuesday with plenty of great performances. I'll try to get to the most notable one, starting with Jesus Luzardo, who helped the Phillies to win in Washington, going 6 2/3 innings, allowing 6 hits and 5 earned runs, walking 3, but fanning 13 with 19 whiffs and 38% CSW across 104 pitches. Luzardo earned the Golden Goal, leading baseball in whiffs with 19 to earn the Gallows Pole, and earning the King Cole by leading baseball with his 38% CSW. Luzardo is 5th in baseball with 110 strikeouts this year, and this start is the epitome of Luzardo's season. Unrosterable ratios with elite strikeout numbers on the season, 4.39 ERA, 1.31 WHIP, but like I said, 5th in strikeouts. Next, we have Sonny Gray, who helped the Red Sox to win in Colorado, tossing 7 innings, allowing 6 hits and 1 run, walking 3 while fanning 10. He induced 16 whiffs with 34% CSW across 93 pitches. And Sonny Gray is tied for the American League lead with 9 wins. He recorded a season-high 11 strikeouts in this one as his sweeper dominated for 13 whiffs and 9 strikeouts. I love to see Gray show that he still got some ace in him, especially doing so even in Coors. Next, we've got Parker Messick, who did all he could, but the Guardians lost in Chicago against the White Sox. He's tossed 7 2/3 innings, allowing 3 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 1 while striking out 10. He induced 17 whiffs with 34% CSW across 95 pitches, and Messick maintained the increased velo he displayed in his last start when he fanned 9 batters. So he's clearly figured out how to put batters away again after a string of 3 starts where he didn't fan more than 4 batters. 4-seam fastballs overwhelmed batters in this one as they lived in the zone with 9 whiffs and 8 strikeouts, while changeups lived arm side and low to keep batters honest. There's no question that Messick is a top 30 starter in baseball, and he may need to be ranked even higher than that. Next, we've got Brandon Sprout, who helped the Brewers to win in Cincinnati, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit, walking nobody while fanning 10, inducing 18 whiffs with 36% CSW across 80 pitches. And with all the great performances on Tuesday, this one might have been the most interesting. Sprout continued to lean heavily on forcing fastballs, and they did a great job living in the zone with 6 whiffs and 40% CSW, but seeing sweepers emphasized at 7% increased usage and responding with 4 whiffs and 38% CSW is what really gets me exciting. Sprout's trio of fastball variants is solid, but it hasn't been enough this year. We've been waiting for a breaker to step up, and the sweeper did so here with great command, low and glove side. I still worry about his weapons against lefties as he's got the changeup and curveball there, but that's a few starts in a row now in which Sprout has looked different, and I probably want to see it at least one more time given the floor he's displayed this season, but he may be worth streaming versus the Reds next with this new approach. Next, we've got Ryan Johnson, who helped the Angels to win against the Orioles, tossing 6 scoreless innings, allowing 1 hit and 1 walk while fanning 8. He induced 15 whiffs with 34% CSW across 90 pitches. And if Sprout's start was the most interesting, this was the most surprising. Johnson has been terrible in his career because of the weird way the Angels have brought him up through the minors. He pitched to a 12.83 ERA in 5 outings prior to this one, so there was nobody expecting him to do anything remotely productive. So to see the former first rounder top 6 1-hit innings is astonishing. He threw 70% strikes overall as 90-mile-per-hour cutters filled up the zone. Sinkers produced tons of grounders, while splitters and sweepers weren't touched, combining for 10 whiffs and 46% CSW. Johnson was lucky to go 9 for 10 on outs on balls in play, and I'm not buying into this after just 1 start, but it's definitely awesome to see Johnson display the potential that made him a first-round pick back in 2024. Lastly, we have Robbie Ray, who helped the Giants to win against the A's, tossing 8 scoreless innings, allowing 2 hits, walking 4 while striking out 6. He induced 13 whiffs with 25% CSW across 102 pitches. Is Robbie Ray back? He had the weird outing last time where he pitched in a suspended game and was electric, and now he comes out and pitches deeper into a game than he has all year. Ray's slider command is still missing, though, as they landed far away versus left-handed batters, leading to 44% strikes, while four-seamers stuck to the edges a little bit too much, producing just 50% strikes. Luckily, sinkers, changeups, and curveballs saved him, combining for 70% strikes and dominating against right-handed batters. I am worried that the luck on balls in play manifesting in him going for 17 outs on 19 balls in play played a huge factor in allowing him to succeed. I'm worried that he's relying too much on that, and that it's clear he hasn't fixed his command to the point where we can say he's back. That slider is still all over the place, and that's the pitch he needs to succeed. Either way, we keep starting Robbie Ray, but be wary that he doesn't look fixed yet. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Caleb Killian pitched a scoreless ninth for his fifth save. Andrés Muñoz struck out the side in order for his 14th save. David Bednar had a perfect four-out save, his 15th of the year. Trevor McGill recorded his 10th save with a perfect ninth. Sean Newcomb had a hitless eight-out save, his second of the year, as Sir Anthony Dominguez and Grant Taylor were unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days. And lastly, Brandon Garcia recorded his first save by getting the final out of the game after Paul Sewald allowed three runs, pitching the ninth up by four. In terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Josh Hader pitched a perfect ninth in a tie game the Astros would win in 11 innings. Pete Fairbanks served up a two-run homer, pitching the ninth up by four. Clayton Beter recorded the final out of the eighth, and then the Nationals turned to Brad Lord, who was given a save chance, but he served up two dingers and allowed six runs to blow his first save and take his first loss. Sam Bachman pitched a perfect ninth up by four. Mason Miller pitched a perfect ninth and 10th in a tie game and earned his second win when the Padres walked it off against Raisel Iglesias, who pitched a scoreless ninth before allowing the zombie runner to score in the 10th to take his second loss. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, June 24th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 16 games as we'll see a doubleheader between the Cubs and Mets. My matchup of the day is Shohei Ohtani versus Joe Ryan. We got the two-way superstar Ohtani squaring off against another ace in Joe Ryan. That should be a great pitching matchup. In terms of probable starters, we've got eight guys in the auto starts tier, including both Ohtani and Ryan. We've also got guys like Jacob deGrom in Miami, Brian Wu in Pittsburgh, and Braxton Ashcraft versus the Mariners. Our probably starts tier has six guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Javier Assad in New York against the Mets. Assad has been very solid this year. He's not a big strikeout guy, but he's been able to take advantage of weak lineups because of his ability to command well, to get weak contact and ground balls, allowing him to produce decent ratios and get a win. So Assad should be pretty solid here against the Mets. I'd also keep an eye out for Sean Manaea versus the Cubs in one of the two games of the doubleheader. I think it's the second one. Manaea has proven better pitching in the rotation thanks to increased velocity and good sweeper command, and he should be pretty decent here, though I feel like the floor is pretty low for that one and the ceiling might not be worth chasing. I'd still go for it if you're looking for a streamer. In terms of hitter suggestions, obviously I'd target the Cubs and Mets in their doubleheader. I'd also look at A's hitters versus Tyler Mahle in Oracle Park, as Mahle is returning from the IL and had a 6.04 ERA prior to getting injured. I'd also look at Red Sox and Rockies hitters in Coors because it's the best hitters park in baseball. We'll see Ranger Suarez square off against Kyle Freeland and his 7.36 ERA in that one. Two lefties, so target right-handed hitters on the Sox and Rockies. I'd also target Phillies and Nationals hitters in Nationals Park, as we'll see Aaron Nola and his 5.71 ERA square off against Miles Mikolas and his 5.47 ERA. Lastly, I'd look at Brewers and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark, one of the best hitters parks in baseball. We'll see Shane Drohan square off against Rhett Lauder in that one. And now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Trevor McGill has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four. So has Abner Uribe. He's pitched in back-to-back and four of the past five. And Aaron Ashby, back-to-back and three of the past four. So expect Joel Kunal to be the top option for a save for the Brewers on Wednesday. Mason Miller has pitched in back-to-back days and three of the past four, but so has Adrian Morahone. So expect Jason Adam to be the top reliever in the Padres bullpen. And lastly, Clayton Beter has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four. So expect one of Gus Varland, Orlando Ribalta, or PJ Poulin to be the closer for the Nationals on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.